So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Christian, and with me today we have a myriad of co-hosts. We have an in-studio audience. We have Leslie on the quality control. We have Chippy Chad on the ones and twos. Dean's in the building, and we're hanging out, and we're talking coping with Christmas. Just what everybody wants to hear, a bunch of addicts or people in recovery talking about the holidays. We're grateful to be here, and I want to give a round of applause for the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
One episode, I broke out this book called Living Sober. And oh my gosh. the response when they saw that book, they were like, What are we doing here? Because it's all this very practical advice about being sober, and some of it's like kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, for someone who has no frame of reference.
And then it was a very feisty episode.
It was ended up being a good episode. Who did we do that with?
That was my first show.
Oh, was it? Yeah. And who else was in there? Oh, okay. Yeah. So, we have a friend of the show. His name is Dr. Giannis. He is a neuropsychologist. Mm-hmm. And he's been on the show a couple times, and really brilliant to hear about how the brain works and why we do certain things. And he's doing a lot of work in Nashville now, working with athletes who kind of hit a wall physically, and how is your brain connected to your body and what's going on there, and to really help people to kind of overcome challenges when they're training or when they're runners or whatever. So I asked him to give us some brain science. Dr. Giannis, to share some scientific shit to help us all cope with Christmas. So I'd like to start by introducing our guests, our hosts, which is Sarah with an H.
There we go.
I blanked on your name.
Josie.
Josie with a J. Clayton.
With a G.
With a G. Because he's G'd up, baby. G'd up. You know how it is. And
Clayton, you can get off the show now. Thank you for your service. Goodbye.
You're just a co-host tonight. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
So I think we're having, I feel like we're having a little bit of fun right now. Isn't it?
Do you have to analyze it to know if it's fun?
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, first off, let's establish, like, what's really happening. We're all sitting here, and we're all reasonably happy. Wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. You know? And I don't know if it's, you know, it's kind of a human condition, but, you know, a lot of us can be pretty miserable. And here we are sitting kind of upbeat and happy, and but that doesn't mean that the four of us sitting here are not going to, and haven't been through this holiday season, going through some shit. So we are experts in the fact that we are going to have to apply this stuff, and we're going to be reading these things, but we're not experts in the way that we're better than anyone else, right? So don't mistake any wisdom you might hear here tonight that we're all going to have this smooth sailing holidays, because it is a weird time. It's weird. And even for me at 13 years, I would have thought, oh yeah, then I would have my shit together. But even then, there's still this undercurrent of uncomfortability that's there. I can't put my finger on it. No one particularly is getting on my nerves, or, you know, I'm not at risk of, you know, using or drinking, but there's this undercurrent of just kind of like, I'm not really, this isn't my jam, the holidays, yeah, for whatever reason, you know? I thought I'd just bring that out. All right, you guys want to hear the first tip?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Sarah.
Nope.
Speak your mind.
Uh-uh.
Practice gratitude. Oh, my God. Mm. Practice gratitude. Gratitude. Now, this is brain science, y'all. Gratitude activates our brain's reward system. It boosts dopamine production. It promoting long-term happiness. Daily journaling of things you're grateful for can rewire your brain to focus on the more positive aspects of life. Y'all believe that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, it's best cliche. Dope in town. Dopamine.
If you don't want him to talk, you're going to have to talk. What's this with gratitude? Let's talk about this. Does it make you, I see that and I think, oh, here's this neuropsychologist telling us that there's actually scientific proof to this shit that my sponsors told me to do for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. But how's it feel? Gratitude, it really does, like, whatever you focus on is going to be what you see. So if you focus on that, this sucks, this feels like shit, I don't like this, then all you're going to see is what sucks, what feels like shit, and what you don't like. But if you focus on, you know, the good parts, you know, you're going to see more of that. And that's not to discount, like, wins, like, things are hard and there are shitty things happening. You know, it's not to discount any of those things or minimize any of those feelings, but to help not grow those feelings. So instead of focusing on, habitually this time of year is very difficult for X, Y, and Z, so I'm expecting X, Y, and Z to happen again, to look at, okay, this year might be able to be a new experience. Like, what can I do different? What can I do instead? How can I be grateful for where I'm at right now while also giving myself the space to feel how I feel about right now?
Josie, what you thinking? You got that I'm thinking face. What you got?
I was just thinking about what gratitude means, because I used to really struggle. I used to think that gratitude, I would sit and try to make a gratitude list, and I wouldn't even know what to write. And I would write, like, very generic things, like, I'm grateful for my family, I'm grateful for my job, but I would still have, like, very negative feelings towards a lot of things that I would write that I was grateful for. And so I like try to scale it back, and I try to be grateful for things like in the moment. So like today I went towards, after work, I went towards Mall of Georgia, and it was such bad traffic. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, this was so stupid of me. But, you know, I was like, at least, you know, as corny as it might seem, I have the ability like to get in my car and to drive to, like, go pick up, like, a Christmas present. And, you know, I have, like, something to look forward to tonight. And it didn't, like, being in traffic didn't, like, ruin my whole mood.
Yeah.
Like it used to. Like, that would have just, like, ruined my day. And that would have been, you know, a reason to drink or, you know, throw a fit or rage in my car and be mad at everybody. So, for me, I think, as somebody who's, like, overcomplicated, I think being grateful can be super simple. Like, just the fact that we're not sitting on the floor right now. Mm. And that, you know, we're inside and it's super cold outside.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. G-Dog Clayton?
No, I agree. I think gratitude is incredibly important. I agree with Sarah on some of this. How does that make you feel? No, I think
How does that make you feel?
I am a creator of my own reality, and we all are creators of our own reality. And truly what you focus on is what you manifest and attract into your life. So I've always tried to stay on the positive side of the equation, on the sunny side of life. And I think it really does manifest itself into a pretty happy life. You know, people that go around and stay focused on the negative, whether it's, you know, that traffic or whatever it is, there's always going to be negatives in our life. You can acknowledge that, and, you know, if there's an action that you need to take, you can take it. If not, you can table it. But, you know, I try to quickly move on from those things and always stay in a very gracious state of mind. And I think that the holidays, or any of these kind of annual holidays or anything like that, it's a great time to reflect on our past life and how much personal growth that we've had. You know, looking back on where you were last year or the year before, or, you know, I bet we can all think back to previous Christmases that we've been through that ended in total debauchery, just a shit show. And And I've got a pretty good Christmas lined up this year, and I know it's not going to end that way. So, it's truly a blessing to kind of count your blessings, and not only the good things. You know, when I reflect on my life over the past year and stuff like that, and I'm doing gratitude, I mean, I'm grateful for the trials as well. I mean, we're forged in fire and have been through hell, and that's what makes us strong. I mean, it's the struggles that strengthen us and that make us the strongest. I mean, if life was just easy all the time, you it's tough to be grateful for anything, like a trust fund baby kind of thing. Like, those people are seemingly very miserable and very ungrateful for life. I mean, when you're given all these opportunities and advantages, so I'm very grateful for the struggles that I've been through.
So all right,
gratitude's important.
The first time someone suggested I do a gratitude list or something, I think I took it as toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, yeah, that shit ain't real. Like, shit isn't good. You want me to be write what I'm grateful for? Like, there's like, that's not like, I'm not being real about my situation and about my life. And, you know, I just kind of did what I was told, you know, and did it. And, you know, even just the simple exercise of writing it out, you know, it does kind of, there was just a little relief, you know?
Yeah. But I think, you know, people take the gratitude list concept and do turn it into toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, I'm glad, like, in with people I've had mentor me, they never had me write a gratitude list. With people I mentor, I do not use gratitude list as a tool, because it minimizes so much. You know, it's like, yes, things suck, but not everything sucks. So what has worked for me, yeah, is when I'm in that phase, like in that headspace of everything sucks, I don't know, like, so let me just call somebody, you know, it, having the person, instead of being like, well, just write a gratitude list, they tell me my gratitude list. They don't tell me to make it. They go, okay, well, do you remember the last time you went through something like this?
Right.
You remember how much it spiraled you out and like all this sort of stuff? Like, they just remind me where I was and where I'm at now. And they go, do you see the win? They don't let me figure it out. They tell me the win and see if I see it. Mm. And that, I like that a lot better than just, oh, I woke up this morning. My car agree. Started.
Yeah. I agree with you. I prefer that. You know what I really can't stand is when you are like, okay, so you're going through something and you call someone and they're like, oh, boo-hoo, you're upset that you're going to a job that pays you money to feed your family. you need to be good. And it's like, whoa. Yeah. Like,
that's not actual gratitude.
Yeah, right, yeah. To me, it never comes, like, that doesn't make me feel grateful. Like, it just,
yeah, it makes you feel like an asshole.
It's like weaponized gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like when we talk, I like the way that you scale it back, and it's like, you know, when you went through this before, and, you know, appreciate the little wins and like the small progress you've made in life. But yeah, I really, when people do that, it makes me sick. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So just beware of weaponized gratitude and toxic positivity.
Positivity, yeah.
I like these.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I'm usually doing that to people, is reflecting them back. Like, a year ago you didn't have this, and today you have this. Like, I think that's a little different, because it's what I'm trying to do in that. And when someone does that to me, what it affirms is the growth, the effort, the work, the journey, the continue moving forward. And here's the evidence of that. Mm. And it does reflect a little differently. It feels more motivational, I guess, is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I need that too. I mean, I've got an excellent forgetter, and our growth is slow. It's like, if you haven't seen somebody for a long time and you're growing your hair out, you know, you may not notice, man, my hair's gotten really long, but somebody you hadn't seen in 6 months sees you and they're like, holy shit, look at the growth that you've gone through. Look how long your hair is.
Who
right
just
now.
Told you you had long hair? This feels very specific.
Well, it's down tonight. I thought it was a good analogy. Cheesy.
It is.
You're going to try to pull me down. You're not going to. No.
I will. One of these days.
He's grateful. Yes. We need that reflected to us, because we don't see it. Because we're in the trudge of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, here's another one. Exercise on a regular.
Mm.
Physical activity increases endorphins and brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. Not what you think, Sarah. Which improve mood and neuroplasticity. Keys for recovery and happiness. Neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to physically change and adapt in response to different experiences, both good and bad. The more good experiences we actively pursue, the more authorship we have in our recovery story. Hmm. Do you like how I read that asterisk? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was good, because we're obviously in over our heads here.
Yes.
Neuroplasticity.
Physical activity. So sometimes what I'll do is I get up and clean. That's like, it doesn't always mean go to the gym or go on a run. For me, it's I need to move my body and I need to clean. I need to organize something. I need to like do something physical to get out of my head. And, you know, what he's saying is it increases endorphins, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDFN.
Stop looking at me when you say that.
I know, I'm sorry. I can just feel you. That's why I'm like... And I think there's a lot more proof on this, like when you do like really high-intensity workouts, like where your heart rate goes up and stuff. Like you can get... You know, I'll feel that way after a really good workout. You feel kind of high, like, oh, I feel good. Hey, what's up, Eli? You got a podcast dog.
No, I think, you know, the physical activity is an important piece because it's one of those, I think we talked about it on the show when we had David and Junior on with us, the importance of exercise, because it does sound like one of those, you know, it's one of those things like gratitude you hear so often. It's like, yeah, but that doesn't actually work. But it does help, you know, because for me it is going to the gym and lifting heavy things because that makes me feel really good about myself. And then, but on the flip side, you know, the same thing that helps can also be contributing to why I feel like shit, you know? So it's like, oh, well, I can normally do this physical activity and today I can't. Like today I'm too weak. And then like it spirals into this whole other self-deprecating conversation with myself. And I had a friend actually who, you know, I was going through like a mentally tough day and he said, well, just, you know, do something physical. I'm like, I can't. I'm like, 'cause if I do, I know it's going to push me down even further. And then he's like, okay. He's like, that's weird. He's like, pick something that doesn't put you in a competition with yourself. Mm. I was like, oh, because that can be going on a walk. Like, I am fortunate that my legs always work. I can go for a walk. Mm-hmm. You know, I can go roller skate. I can clean, like, you know, move, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't have to be like this. Like, I set this goal for myself. This is what I'm going to do. And then, I didn't reach the goal. And so now I'm going to shame myself and feel bad. But I can still get benefit from physical activity.
Yeah.
I have been struggling with physical activity. I haven't exercised in so long, like actually exercised. Sometimes I'll go for a walk. My sister is a health teacher and a PE teacher. And she goes to the gym like every day. And so does my cousin. And they are like super into going to the gym and they're like, it helps so much. And I know it does. It's just working that into my day. Mm. And then like, it doesn't help that like my job, like I sit, like I'll get up because like after an hour, I try to get up and move around. But since getting sober, like it's been difficult to incorporate like mindful physical activity into my schedule, into my routine.
Yeah.
To
mindful
be honest.
Physical activity. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same for like when I get really busy, that's the first thing that goes is the gym. I'm like, wake up, I'm trying to get right to work and then I work till I'm done and then I go home. And, but I think that's why cleaning is like a thing that I can do because at least gets me moving and it doesn't take a lot for me. You work with your.
Yeah, I'm blessed to have a very physically active job, which I absolutely love. Times in my life where I've had a desk job, I mean, I'd notice a drastic increase in stress, decrease in mood, stuff like that. And those jobs are probably more stressful as well. So that had something to do with it. But yeah, I mean, I get to be active all day, every day with what I do for work. So that's a blessing. I don't really exercise, but I certainly do... believe the benefits of high energy physical activity. Yeah, if you're ever in a funk, just get up and move. I'm glad that you said mindfulness and stuff as well, because get up and move or don't. Meditate, do yoga, do some sort of mindful activity. Those are very beneficial to me as well. They really help calm your mental space. But as far as like a good endorphin release, yeah, the more physical, the better.
So if your uncle's tripping at the Christmas dinner, just start doing jumping jacks, all right? Just start hitting push-ups, and just when they're like, what are you doing? Are you on drugs? Just
what
say
if you
no.
Throw
I'm
punches.
Trying at your
not uncle.
To do drugs.
They already think we're crazy.
Throw punches at him instead.
Oh, throw punches. Yeah, they already think you're crazy. So doing random push-ups at the kitchen table. Yeah.
Not that out of character.
Not that. Yeah. All right. Prioritize meaningful social connections. Again, this is coming from a neuropsychologist, which is also, we get this from our jacked up peers too. They tell us the same thing. It's kind of weird. Strong relationships boost oxytocin levels. Can I tell a story about oxytocin?
I was hoping
Please.
You were going to.
I was hoping you, really? You would.
I think I know what you're going to tell.
So there's an episode in Montana Society. And they're going through all these things that's in the bunker. We do this little section called Bunker Finds. I did this whole musical number and everything. And so they find random stuff in the bunker. And they found this substance called oxytocin. And they're like, oh, my God. And, I mean, they're in the bunker. So, you know, I don't think they got much internet service or anything. So they didn't look it up. But they're just thinking, oxytocin. Oh, this is going to get someone jacked up. And we better hide this and stuff like that. And so I'm watching this clip, and I'm going, what is oxytocin? So I Google it, and it's essentially, it's like the love hormone is what they call it. And so it's released when large amounts of oxytocin is released, like when a mother gives birth, and the child and the mother both have high levels of oxytocin, and it's meant to foster connection between the two. And like you can hug or... meaningful connections boost this oxytocin level, which decrease stress while increasing feelings of happiness and connection.
I think people were just confusing it for Oxycontin.
Yes. That's
like,
probably
you gotta trade one oxy for the other.
Yes. Yeah. Trading oxys.
Put that on a shirt.
Put that on a shirt. I'm trading oxys.
Chad, next shirt idea.
Yeah, new shirt idea.
I totally agree with that. On Monday, my friend, sister, and cousin came over. We were doing some crafts and talking and socializing. And afterwards, I felt like I was just like, I had like a runner's high. I was just so happy. And sometimes I will go to meetings and I'll talk with people afterwards. And I'll just be like, I'll be driving home smiling. Like I'll get off the phone. And I'll be really, really happy. And I used to feel really embarrassed of it because I'm like, what am I even happy about right now? Like, what is this feeling inside of me? And because I just never had that before. Mm. Like, when I was drinking and I would have fun and stuff, it's just, I can't even put it into words. But now I feel like my connections with people are so much more, like, meaningful and, like, just thoughtful. We're not, like, on our phones. We're not just talking, like, nonsense, you know? So, yeah. I love socializing.
Yeah.
See, that shit right there is, like, what I love getting to see happen in people is because I remember that feeling. I always called it the post-meeting high. You know, and just like being able to see someone go from first giving sobriety a shot and then getting to the point where it's like, no, like I love this. And it's like this happiness, you know, being embarrassed of happiness because you're not used to it.
It's kind of like an addict thing to do. Be like mad at yourself for being happy.
Yeah.
Totally.
No, I think connection is everything. At the recovery community that I'm a big part of, one of our taglines is connection is the opposite of addiction. And that's truly one of the things that we get back when we're able to get far enough away from our substance use is we gain that connection back with our fellows, with our people in recovery community, our families. we regained that connection, and in an act of addiction, for me, it was just completely severed. So I certainly think community is huge, and in terms of being able to get through the holiday seasons and stuff like that, like, absolutely stay plugged into your network, like, call your people, call your sponsor, and I mean, I already talk to people kind of like pre-planning those calls, because I mean, the holidays are very busy and stuff, so if you've got a particularly stressful event coming up, something you know might be triggering or something, go ahead and talk to somebody about it and be like, hey, you know, I'm going to be here this night or something, I might call you, will you try to be available, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that was...
Yeah, if you know you're going to be across the table from your crazy uncle,
mm-hmm.
you might want to, like...
I can only do so many push-ups.
Yes, right. you mentioned this, practice meditation or mindfulness. Mindfulness and meditation decrease amygdala activity.
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Reducing stress. I didn't know that decreasing the amygdala activity reduced stress, but... And increases prefrontal cortex activity, which is linked to emotional regulation and sustained happiness. Mm. When he was on the show, he was Dr. Zach, who presented these tips for us. He was talking about that prefrontal is what kind of gets slowed in continuous active use. It also gets really slow when you're really angry. Mm. You know, it's what they say, like, anger makes you dumb. Because you have, like, in the prefrontal cortex is where the brakes are. It's the rational and the logic thinking. So here's some scientific evidence that practicing meditation or mindfulness really helps. It's linked to regulation and sustained happiness. Mm. You like meditation.
I love meditation.
You asked me if I liked meditation.
I did.
Do you remember what I answered?
It was something, the fuck you think I sit still? Something to that effect.
Yeah, sit quiet alone with my thoughts. No, yeah. Thank you.
It's not an easy thing to do, especially early on. It's very easy. After, you know, some time, it becomes a little bit easier for me, or did become a little bit easier for me to find that quiet place.
Now, what kind of meditation are you doing? Are you like cross-legged?
You don't have to be. I mean,
but what do you do? What's your practice?
I sit cross-legged quite often. So
do you do lotus position?
I've dedicated a room in my house solely to meditation. So it's a very sacred space. And when I walk in that space, it immediately has an aura to it and a peace and serenity when I cross that threshold. And I love that. And I don't have any other conversations in that room. I mean, so it's a very sacred space for me. But yeah, I go in there, you know, mood, I guess ambiance is big for me. So, I mean, you know, I got the music and the candles and the incense and the Palo Santo and all those different things. I think it really brings everything together and makes for a wonderful experience. Sometimes I do very often guided meditations, and, you know, you can find those all over YouTube or various apps and stuff. But, the most difficult form of meditation is certainly sitting in silence. You know, as somebody with ADHD, my brain wants something to attach to, right? And so the guided meditations are certainly helpful, especially in the beginning. It gives you just enough to focus on and draw your attention, and it directs you to where you don't really have to do the thinking or non-thinking yourself. So that certainly helps. And I believe you're pronouncing it wrong. I think it's the amygdala oblongata.
Amygdala oblongata?
That's a different thing from
no,
the
that's
amygdala.
A different.
That's the rays of sunshine that comes down when you're feeling blue.
Bro.
Your medulla oblongata.
Medulla oblongata.
This is the amygdala. That's different than the medulla oblongata.
The water boy would disagree.
Oh.
Is that why my brain also thought of that one?
We were all thinking it. Somebody had to speak it.
Who else meditates?
Who meditates, Christian? But I want to talk about mindfulness. Because meditation and mindfulness often just get lumped together like they're the same thing, and they're not. Mm-hmm. You know, because meditation is, or one of the forms of meditation is what Clayton just talked about. You know, it is that lotus You know, I don't do that. I can't, you know, guided meditations. I've tried them. That's cool. Glad they work for some people. I probably will get to the point where I try meditation again. But for now, I don't like it. So I practice mindfulness, which is literally just being aware of your surroundings and of yourself. Like, you can mindfully do anything. You can mindfully get dressed in the morning. You can mindfully brush your teeth. You can mindfully eat your food. You know, like, everything you can do it mindfully instead of mindlessly, which is, I know for me, I've gotten so used to doing everything mindlessly, like just being on autopilot, going through life and not being aware of what I'm actually doing. And that's mindfulness, taking everything into account, capturing everything. And then that brings a new appreciation for what maybe used to be mundane. It also, you know, if you are mindful of your surroundings and everything else, it's a lot harder, in my experience, for anxiety to creep in, because now I'm not freaking out about what's to come. I'm not freaking out about what already happened. I'm here. I'm like, it's right now. And, you know, nothing bad is happening. You know, I'm sitting on this couch talking with a couple of fucking weirdos.
Nice. Mindfully.
I take
mindfully.
Mindfulness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't meditate, though. I'm not going to lie.
No, there's so much power in what you just said, though. I mean, just slowing down in our lives. I mean, our society, we've gotten way too fast. It's way too fast-paced. There's too much stimuli going on. And just to slow down, whether that's through meditation or just through mindfulness, and there is a distinction, and I'm glad you brought it up and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, even just going through the senses, your senses, like as you're brushing your teeth, like what does this feel like? What does it sound like? What does it taste like? Like all that kind of stuff and stuff. It brings a really great sense of appreciation and gratitude towards very simple everyday activities. And it is beautiful. So,
and if you are mindfully brushing your teeth and you notice that, oh, this actually hurts, you should probably go to the dentist.
Yeah. If you're mindfully brushing your teeth and you spit out blood, then you should probably
call the dentist.
Yeah. So I'm being facetious about meditation. I don't particularly enjoy it, but I have had bouts of positive relationship with it. And what works for me is focusing on my breathing, like the box breathing is one thing that really helps. And I really like the concept of focusing on your breath, because your breath is always there and it's always can be accessed. And so it doesn't need to be a production or anything, right? Like, you can literally, like, and no one else needs to know that that's what you're doing. You're just breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. And when I've sat and meditated, that's how I keep that monkey mind busy, by focusing on the breath, counting, breathing in for four, hold for four, breathe out, box breathing, and those kind of things. And I think that's mindfulness. Mm-hmm. When you're just becoming aware of that. What about for you? Are you a meditator?
Not really. I've tried. When I went to treatment, there's a lot of meditation. It's hard because I'm a single mom with two kids. So they barely even let me do my makeup or brush my teeth. But I do it anyway. So typically for me, it'll be in the car. Sometimes I'll drive in silence, or I'll like say a prayer in my head. Like laying down before I go to sleep, listening to something. But like the way you were describing it, I don't do that, but I would like to. It's just the same thing with exercise, like working that into my routine, you know?
Yeah.
But I do practice a lot of mindfulness.
Yeah. And I like to just, like, you know, people, you have to be where you are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I like the way you're talking about, like, you haven't worked the gym in, or you haven't worked working out into your schedule, you haven't worked meditation in. And so you're not like kicking your own ass for not doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was like my approach in early recovery, was I was just always kicking my ass because I wasn't doing it right or perfect or whatever, you know? And so it took a long time for me to just accept that, okay, maybe that's something I would like to explore. It doesn't really fit right now, but let me see how it might fit. Then there's so much, such a more openness to that, and it's more inviting as opposed to what my brain usually is doing, which is, you should probably, you know, what are you doing? You need to be meditating 15 minutes, and you need to be doing this. And that judgment of myself was so harmful. It was just, and what it did was just keep me on a loop, mm-hmm. you know? And I didn't get high, but I was miserable for a long freaking time because mm-hmm. of that judgment mind. And
yeah, I used to do that a lot. I was always in competition with myself. And previously in trying to get sober, I remember thinking that it was like I was in a competition of like doing, like if I hit certain benchmarks, if I don't do things a certain way, then I fail. And like I knew it, I can't do this anyway, and I give up. And so I've had to be really mindful in, you know, not beating myself up and being so critical of myself. Like, it will happen, but I also realize, you know, like everything I have going on in my life right now, like, why would I stress myself out more by trying to work something else in? Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't, then the meditation or the gym or whatever it might be isn't going to serve me the way it, because I'm like forcing it.
And it's not like you're not doing other things, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You're in fellowship. You're probably talking on the phone to people. There's a lot of other things that you're doing to maintain your recovery and mental health.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're, you know, just sitting around not thinking, not trying to do something about staying in recovery and being and getting better. I just wanted to say that because I always feel like I don't want people to like, oh, now I got to freaking meditate, you know, Jesus.
Exactly.
No, I'm just trying not to do heroin this weekend, you know, like.
If you don't do heroin this weekend, it's a win.
Yes. Yes.
Regardless if you meditate or not, it's yes, a win.
Yes.
It is simply another tool in the toolbox. And for me, it's a powerful one. But I mean, at this point, I've got a lot of tools in the toolbox and there's no way I have time to use them all. So I think, you know, what y'all were saying about giving yourself some grace and stuff for the things that you are doing and don't worry so much. I mean, about the things that you don't have time for right now. And, you know, as time goes on, you can reprioritize things, mix different things in, stuff like that. And as far as approaching meditation, I mean, it doesn't have to be approached with, like, I don't know. It's not this Herculean task. You don't have to all of a sudden jump out and be like, I'm going to meditate for an hour a day and I have to be quiet. I mean, just mm-hmm. like 5 minutes here or there mm-hmm. to start. And, you know, if you see some benefit there, it's going to naturally start to take a progression. But, yeah, certainly just, you know, Giving yourself grace, I think, and practicing non-judgment, mostly with ourselves, I find it the most difficult to practice that with yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy, like, the way you were describing that room, that a place that you go to, right? And for you, you've designated a room. And for some people, it might be a chair in your house, right? Like, maybe it's the chair and that's where you read literature, or maybe that's where you sit and kind of think and be contemplative. And I have a... one of my kids moved out, and so I immediately changed her room into a music room.
I was
room.
Thinking that. The music
and
space.
And that's my space. And when I go in that room, that's what that place is for. And if you can't do a room, but maybe it is just a chair or it's a certain place that you constantly go to, it does something. There's something ritual about that and helps. All right. And so I don't. You guys haven't met Dr. Giannis, but... he's a homie, so this is how he says it. Catch them Z's, homie.
I love how you say that as if you wouldn't also say it like
that. Well, that's
that.
Why I had to clarify, because I'm not the one saying that. He wrote this.
Okay, you're like, I'm not paraphrasing, I swear.
I'm not paraphrasing. we were talking about how many neurons are... neurons? Is it neurons? No. Neuro connections are in the brain. Okay. And he's like, it's a shit ton. He's like, well, I mean, you know, it's like over a billion neurons. Anyway, consistent, adequate sleep is crucial for the management of neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, both of which are vital for mood, stability, and happiness.
This one is like a really big deal, I think, because I know like, I like when we were talking about physical activity, you said that's the first thing that goes when you get busy. For me, it's sleep. I'm like, if I have so much going on that something's got to go, I'm going to sleep less. You know, I'll just have a Red Bull. I'll have a lot of coffee. Like, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I don't need to sleep. I remember I started working with a new therapist this year, and she asked me, like, in our first session, she was like, well, how many hours of sleep do you get per night? And I was like, five. I'm like, I do pretty good at five. She looked at me. She was just like, oh, no. She was like, I need you to get that to 8 to 10. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I did. And, you know, like, I do consistent. I make sure I'm getting 8 hours of sleep a night. And there's been a huge difference. Like, not just the bags under my eyes. Everything else, too. Like, you know, there is more, you know, consistency and stability in where my mental space is at. I do have a more, like, yeah, just a more consistent workflow, more consistent everything by simply getting enough sleep every night, which I always thought was a crock of shit because caffeine exists.
Right.
But, you know, caffeine can only go so far.
Yeah.
I love sleep. I love it. I will take a nap in my car during my lunch break at work. That is the best. I'll set a timer. If I'm tired, I will stop and take a nap, or I'll just go to bed. This week I wasn't feeling well, and I went to bed at 7:30. I put my son to sleep. I was like, "Yep, come lay down. That's it.
We're all going to bed."
Yeah, especially like if I don't have good sleep, I feel like I'm hungover. Feel really sick, and I don't function the same. But I do feel like the world we live in, because there's like so much hustling and bustling and moving, you know, like I'll see like my mom sometimes and I'm like, just rest. Like, even if it's not like full-blown sleep, like just sitting and resting, and it's crucial. Like, everything else can wait.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, if I feel tired, especially with like mental creative tasks, if I'm getting where I feel tired, it's like my brain, it's not clicking. Mm-hmm. And what I found was if I do just take a 20-minute nap and then I wake up and then it's like my brain resets and then I totally get right back to work. So it's actually the most productive thing I can do is to stop and take a rest, and I can get back to work quicker. Rather than if I try to trudge through it, you know, it might not be effective. It takes a lot longer. You know, the flow is not there, and it's much harder. So,
yeah, irritable. I remember when I first got sober, there was a caseworker, and he said, I was having a hard time sleeping at first. And he's like, if you lose sleep, he's like, you are, you know, there's a big chance of you relapsing because you're just, like, awake, and then you're restless, and then, you know, you're going to want to drink. And I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. And he was so right. Like, there was a few nights where I was up super late with my own thoughts, and I didn't know what to do. And I would end up drinking. Like, having me a couple times. I don't know. And I also used to think that, like, drinking would help me sleep. And now it is like a world of a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not getting any sleep when you're drinking.
Yeah.
Like, at all.
That drunk sleep is a different. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't actually go into REM, so you're not.
Yeah.
You might as well not.
Yeah.
You're just dancing in the clouds, baby. That's all you're doing. You're not
one
sleeping.
One foot off the bed, so yeah. You're not spinning.
Yeah. Oh. I don't think I got REM sleep for 10 years straight.
Yeah.
But no, sleep's important. But I don't have a super healthy sleep schedule. But I think that's what's imperative, is like finding that sleep schedule and sticking to it. And to relate it back to our topic of the holidays and stuff, like your routine, like trying to stick to your routine as much as possible. And that goes back for the sleep thing, for bedtime. But as far as coping with the holidays, stick to your schedule, stick to your meeting schedule, stick to your journaling schedule. If you meditate, if you exercise, whatever. I know there's a lot packed into the holidays, but try to stick to that schedule as much as possible is something that I, you know, will be trying to practice.
No, that's an important piece that you brought up, is like sticking to your schedule, because there is a lot of pressure, especially around the holidays, to deviate from your schedule to appease this person, that person, this person. You do not have to show up. to everything you're invited to. Mm-hmm. You don't have to show up to a single thing you're invited to. Your only obligation as a person in recovery and the holiday season is to maintain your recovery through this season. So if that means you just don't have it in you to be at like this family event, those with those friends, it does not matter. Like, stick with your meetings, stick with your network, stick with the things that has been helping you maintain your recovery and relieve yourself of the expectation of pleasing other people, because you don't have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that back. So let's see. We're going to do this. We're going to skip one and go to engage with your creative mind. Creative expression engages our brain's reward system, increasing dopamine and improving emotional well-being. Activities like art, music, or journaling are effective tools for happiness and healing.
I love how happiness is like in every description. Like, this man's like a happiness junkie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sustained
he is.
Sustained happiness, long-term happiness.
You know who else talks a lot about happiness is Buddhists. And I like that. I like that's a good goal, to be happy. Like, yeah, I'm with that. I want to be happy. You know, I mean, that's why I did cocaine, because I was like, I want to be fucking happy. You know? So finding natural ways to be happy, you know? And it was so, like, I mean, it was so elusive. Especially in the, like, when I first got sober, like, happiness was like a warm gun, right? Like, it was not, it was so hard to find. I didn't know how to get it.
Well, that's part of the issue. It's not something that we chase or that we seek. Happiness is within us right now, within all of us, regardless of where you are. It's just your ability to recognize it and be grateful. And you're kind of seeking that contentment. And there's a lot of happiness and contentment. And I used to think of contentment more as like settling and stuff, so I kind of saw it as a bad thing. But I've kind of reframed that definition to really value contentment in what I have here and now. So
I like
we all have
it's
happiness
in you already.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what he's saying here, right? I mean, it's literally brain chemistry that we just have to activate by doing certain things to access that happiness.
But I love too that this engaging with your creative mind, this isn't a list he made for creatives. This is a list he made for people with brains.
Yeah.
As far as I know, everyone has a brain, whether you're an artist or not.
Those without brains, just tune this next part.
But because, you know, I always feel like the arts is the first thing to go. That's the first thing that's not important. If you're too busy, you know, if you don't have time to make art, you don't have time to make art. You're doing important stuff. You're making money. You're doing whatever is important. That's not art. But, I also appreciate that journaling was included on here, because it's not, you know, you don't have to create a masterpiece. You don't have to exercise a new skill or anything. You just simply do something. Because it's for me, what I've had to, because I will set aside creative things when I get stressed out, because then it's that competition with myself, and I'm just like, and now I'm not even creating anything as good as I used to, and it's just like a whole spiral. But even if I just journal, I'm writing. Even if it's just the thoughts in my head, I am writing. I'm physically engaging with a pencil or a pen and a sheet of paper, and then more often than not, it turns into something else. Like, okay, I got this thought out. Oh my God, this thought isn't even as big as I thought it was. It's literally a sentence, and it felt like a novel in my head. And now I got this out, and now I have, you know, cleared space to turn it into something else. And I can actually do the art, because that is something I happen to be passionate about, but it doesn't have to be a grandiose thing. And you can be a mathematician or a science person or, I don't know, those STEM kids and still do art. It'll still benefit you.
Yeah.
My 10-year-old loves art. He's super creative. He loves drawing. And sometimes, you know, people be like, oh, he spends like so much time in his room drawing and coloring. And I'm like, I have no issue with that whatsoever, like with that type of creative outlet. And he's, you know, he's very talented and skilled, and he draws better than me. My creative outlet, like journaling. I tried junk journaling, you know.
What's that?
So you like go out and so, like this week I took my kids to the Sonic 3 premiere, and they gave us, my son won these free passes. So I have like the passes. And then when I got there, I got like the little tickets to the theater. So then you go home, and in your journal, I'll tape like the movie stub and like the flyer or like whatever, and I'll write, you know, like the date and what we did, and it's very simple. Or, you know, you can even take like stuff that you ate for. I've done this. I had Chipotle for lunch. I cut the Chipotle bag and I taped it into the note. Into the notebook, and then I did like other things. You could put like stickers because sometimes I can't like write my words to paper is hard about like to for my day, and so like putting scraps of my day that I've come in contact with into the notebook, that's a good way to be creative.
Yeah, junk journaling is literally just scrapbooking and journaling come together.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I love that you cut the Chipotle bag.
I did. I was wondering where you were going with that. So if you had like a piece of rice,
yeah,
or
please tell me it was a piece wrapper of carne asada and not just like a smear.
The brown bag.
Yeah,
that must have been a good ass burrito.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the good bowl. Yeah, a good burrito bowl.
That's what it is. We get burrito bowls, baby. We don't smoke bowls no more. We get burrito bowls.
It's all about that burrito bowl.
That's right.
But like, I mean, with my son, like, I just encourage that because. Like I want him to always realize like it's so important to have some type of creative outlet. So I just push him. Sometimes he doesn't want to, you know, do anything else, but you know, it's a healthy way of letting things out.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I think having a creative outlet is incredible. And I mean, for people that don't feel like they're creative, but even beyond that, just a passion. Have some things that you're passionate about. I mean, like hobbies, activities, just some stuff that you enjoy doing. And as you guys were talking, and we were talking about, you know, earlier how life gets so busy and stuff. I hate that, like, when life gets really busy, those are the first things for me that fall out of my life are, like, the things that I'm really passionate about, those creative outlets, like playing music and going hiking and mountain biking.
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying to get back together in the studio.
I know, for, like,
for weeks, and we're both, like, just so busy. And we had such an amazing experience working together in the studio, and it was so fulfilling. And it's like, we both are like, yeah, we want to do that again and do that regularly. But then it's the first thing where we're like, I got work, or I'm tired, or this is going on. And so we're not going to do that.
I wonder though, you know, because that is a common experience, is like the things you're passionate about are the first things to leave your schedule. Is it possibly related to self-esteem or self-worth or self-confidence? Because it's like, okay, you know, it doesn't make me money, it doesn't pay my bills, it doesn't do my grocery shopping, it doesn't, but it satisfies my soul. And that's not enough. That is not enough to keep it on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only justification
that
I've got also is, yeah, I mean, there's less utility there, right? I'm not getting as many things back from this. And
just my sustained happiness and my general well-being.
Yeah, just those little things.
But for me, like, I used to be so career-driven, and I would put in, God, so many hours and hours and, you know, effort into my career, and I used to always think like if I get to this point in my career, then I'll be able to pursue hobbies and vacation, and then I would get there. And it's like the higher I went up, the more responsibilities came with it, the higher my bills got, and I was like so obsessed with being successful, but I was completely miserable. And I now just really make a conscious effort to make time for the things that I enjoy doing, instead of being like, yeah, so focused on like money and like it's stressful, but you know, like this holiday, I was stressed about money and stuff, but I found ways to like be creative to give people gifts. So like use my creativity to give to others, you know, it's the thought that really counts. Instead of sitting there being like, oh man, I wish I had a better job and I wish I wasn't, well, but it's like, when I did have the money, I was miserable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The desire for things to be different is a big cause of suffering and stuff in our life. But I just blame society for what we were talking about. I mean, in a society that's focused on material things, they're focused on career, they're focused on appearances and, you know, keeping a nice house and stuff like that. I mean, it prioritizes all those things. You know, before that was really a thing in a more simplistic society or minimalist type of society. I mean, we need to, AI, we are refocusing on happiness. We want y'all to do the work. We're just going to make ourselves happy.
Right.
It was funny. I saw something posted a while back, and it was about AI, and like AI was generating art, and they were generating music and stuff like that. And they were like, "What the fuck is this?" They were like, "I wanted AI to do the laundry so that
yeah,
I could do
I
the
saw
art,
that too.
Like not the other way around. Like it's creating my art for me."
Mm-hmm. But I think like the note on consumerism was important. You know, the whole like, "Oh well, I don't have enough money to be to." For my holiday to be how I want it to be, I don't have enough money. Because I think that is like a stressor for a lot of people around this time, especially, I mean, at least the parents that I know, it's always like, how am I going to provide for my kids? And I'm fortunate enough that that is not one of my worries. And they are nieces and nephews. And if auntie can afford it, she can afford it. If she can't, I still love you, you know? But it's that, you know, this year I specifically, you know, it has been financially difficult. Like this entire year has been financially difficult for me. And so reframing like my love for somebody has nothing to do with a financial thing I can get for them. It has nothing to do with a dinner I take them out to. It has nothing to do with a present I get them. It has everything to do with how I treat them, how I show up for them in their life. Mm. You know, so this year what I got to practice was relieving myself of that burden of, you know, showing my love through financial means. Because mm-hmm. I just bought a car. I don't have, yeah. Which is great. That was my Christmas gift to myself. But, you know, that doesn't leave me with much room to be extravagant in other areas because that was a big extravagant purchase. And so if I can't, you know, buy the nicest toy for my nieces and nephews, like, so be it. That doesn't mean I love them any less. Yeah. And I can just, you know, yes, love other people, but also I got to take care of myself first. And if I can't, you know, if I get you a nice gift at the expense of me being able to pay my rent this month, what good does that do for anybody?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a good point, too, for people who are like newly starting their recovery journey this season, you know, and there's got to be a lot of feelings of like, okay, well, I can't do what I used to do. You know, I yeah. can't buy gifts and I can't take everyone out to dinner and I'm living in a sober living and I'm barely making it by and I'm going to these damn meetings every day and what the hell. And, you know, and I think what people remember is not the gift, right? Like you know, I mean, I can remember a couple gifts I got as a kid and, you know, I got a Millennium Falcon once. It was wrapped in newspaper. But other than that, I don't think I know of any other gift I got. But what I do remember are the moments like at the dinner table with everybody, mm-hmm. the moments of feeling a sense of joy and security and safety with my family. Like those kind of things I think are more meaningful. And if you can bring that because you're sober, you can bring that to your family. Mm-hmm. That's huge. Like that's a big thing. And to not get caught up in, you know, because there's, you know, like David always says, it's the get backs that get you. You know, it's like everyone wants to get back. They want to get the girl back and their car back and their house back and their job back and their money back. And that's the stuff that takes a lot of people right back to living the way they were, you know, trying to fast forward to it. So in closing, I would like to read, or if one of you want to read these, we got some.
They all say the same thing, basically.
Okay. What do they say?
Surmise it.
I can't say that on air. well, yeah, Christian reached out to friends on Facebook for general tips for surviving the holiday season. And the common ones were, you know, continuing with recovery meetings like we've talked about tonight, keeping with your network, exercise. The gym was up here a lot, honestly. Gym, God, you know, two big G's in these groups.
Big G's.
Big G's. Not that one.
Got the third one over here.
Not that one.
It's
and
like
then
the Holy Trinity.
And a couple people, I think, also important. They suggested sticking to your boundaries. So again, if you feel pressured to deviate from your normal routine that keeps you sane and sober, do not, if it's not going to keep you sane and sober.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my first sober Christmas was very small and intimate. It was just my immediate family. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't ready to go be with everybody. You know, it just, it was too much. And then not that I had a desire to drink or use, but it was just too much. I didn't want, I needed something simple. And so that's like enforcing a boundary of like saying, all right, like I need something really simple. And I don't want to be, maybe for you, being around family is, maybe you used to drink or use with family, and that's might be difficult. So that's a boundary to set, to say, all right. Or even, you know, because people get weird too. Like, you know, like they're not sure, can they drink, or, you know, or then they make a big deal out of it. And so, yeah, if you have to simplify.
Yeah. And I do also want to say that if being around family is not a good idea for you around the holidays, being alone is also not a good idea. I'm going to tell you that. And if you don't know where to go, you know, on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, New Year's Day, any of the days that are coming up, if you don't have anywhere to go, please reach out to us, and we can get you connected with places that have events going on all day or for good portions of the day, so you don't have to be alone.
Yeah. I like Fred said something here, which is always take your own vehicle to a gathering and to leave at the first sign of trouble. And I like that. And that's like a really good relapse prevention plan, is to always have an exit. If you're going into a function or gathering where there's so many variables that you can't control, is having an exit plan of like, okay, I know that if it gets too much. And too much, it doesn't have to be, again, like for me, it wasn't like I felt a desire to drink. It was just like the, I would have this heightened sense of awareness and I could hear every freaking conversation in the room, and it was too much. Like I didn't like go into the mall. It was too much. And so that's all it needs to be. It just needs to be where you're feeling a sense of uncomfortable. And it doesn't mean that you're, you don't have to have a desire or a what do they call it? A craving or anything like that for it to be too much for you. If it's just to the point where you're like, this is getting too much, then like you said, like, you know, your main, the main thing is the main thing, which is maintain your recovery.
Yeah, prioritize yourself, prioritize your recovery, setting those boundaries. If it's not good for you, don't go. Establish your new, your own new traditions and things like that. And one thing that I've done a lot of, you know, in the past couple of years and stuff, is I like to bring my own mocktails and stuff like that to these functions or stuff. So, you know, wherever I'm at, there's always a good sober beverage option that's, you know, kind of exciting and whatnot. So, you know, play around with that. But I loved having mocktails.
Shirley Temples.
You know, yeah.
I was calling my emotional support beverages. And the so emotional, they might take, yeah, it's a drink that is for me, not for you. And I bring it for myself and myself only, because you guys have alcohol and I don't. So this is my emotional support beverage.
Yeah.
Just keeping something in my hand, because everyone else is going to have something in their hand the whole time, and then I'll be aware that I don't. And so that's my emotional support Red Bull.
Yeah, and obviously we're talking within the context of a family thing, so they probably know that you're sober. But like when you're not in a in an environment that's aware that you're sober, it's amazing how just having something in your hand deters people from coming up and offering you alcohol. So, have something in your hand that's not a bottle of water, or you'll get offered alcohol.
Yeah, water. Water is great. It's nutritious. It's hydrating. You should be drinking plenty of it every day. But it does not cut it in social situations. Yeah. You become very aware of drinking water.
And I, like for me, I think everything happens for a reason. Because when my son won those tickets to the Sonic premiere, I was like, oh my gosh, it's on Tuesday, the same night as my work dinner, and I'm like, gosh, I'm gonna miss the work dinner, but I'm gonna take my kids to the movies. And the next day, they were like, the owner put his card down. He was like, drinks on me. And they're like, there's about 30 of us there. We got 33 shots. And I'm like, I would have been the only one. So, you know, I was bummed that I missed out, but I feel like it was a blessing from who knows who that I wasn't there. Because it's those situations where, it's like you can – everyone's like, well, you don't have a – like, oh, come on. Like, how, you know. So going back to the plans thing, it's – you know, people are like, oh, seriously, you're not coming? And I'm like, no. I have plans with my kids. I'm taking them to the movies.
Yeah. And that was important for you.
Yeah.
And then sometimes family don't get it, right? They're like, oh, well, you can have a beer. I mean, your problem's like heroin. It's not beer. Like, you can have a beer. You know, people don't get it. They don't understand, like, and there's nothing wrong. They just don't understand it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and they're family, so they think they can tell you whatever. And they think they know what's best for you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think family is kind of the triggering thing about the holidays.
Are you just learning this?
No, but I like to call it the obvious thing, just in case.
I love you guys.
Love y'all.
They don't watch this.
Yeah.
They don't watch this. No. I love you guys.
They're confused by this.
They're like, how did we get an alcoholic?
Wait, he prayed first, and then they said all those things. I don't know what to think about the Most High show.
They weren't even high?
Yeah.
Misleading.
Yes, right. Yeah. Well, I hope this has been helpful. It's certainly been helpful for me, and I feel like everyone here. I think, mm-hmm. you know, some good reminders. And you know, reach out. There are a lot of 24-hour places mm-hmm. where meetings are happening. People are hanging out, and you're not going to be the only one. And there's a reason why, you know, we do those, because we know that it's a tough time, mm-hmm. you know, and... you know, the bottom line is, like, you know, we need you to survive. Yeah. We need you.
Every year someone doesn't make it back, so
yeah.
Make sure it's not you.
We need you to survive, and we want to be helpful in any way we can, and, you know, it doesn't matter, as much of a asshole as you are, we need you to survive, so please stick around, and if it gets hard and it gets heavy, there's 988 is a crisis hotline. If you don't have people in your network that you feel comfortable with reaching out to, that's a resource, 988. Just dial it, or you can text 988. You know, if you're feeling like a conversation's too much, and you'll get text support right away. Mm-hmm. And just reach out. You know, I think that's important. So mm-hmm. I like to thank you.
Direct message us on Instagram.
Direct message us.
Emails.
Yep.
Just however, get in contact with a sober person, any form you know how, or 988 is also a great resource.
And just don't isolate. Don't kid yourself. Acknowledge what you're going into can be a difficult situation. And because so the correlation between like childhood trauma, family trauma, and substance use disorder is absolutely astounding. So the fact that we're all about to go spend probably a lot of time with our families, you know, just be cognizant of that and be aware of the situation that you're walking into that could be, you know, a lot of childhood trauma that comes back and stuff. So just know you're not alone, and there's a lot of resources out there for you.
Yeah. All right. So I'd like to thank the donors and supporters who make this show possible. I thank everybody here for hanging out and having a holiday celebration with us, eating some food, kicking it, watching us talk shit. So this has been another fantastic episode of The Most High Show. Peace.
Whee!